Sound right? Okay, good morning. I'm so thrilled to be here. It's I appreciate you allowing me to come again to stay a while after I was injured in November and unable to come at that point. In November, and the other thing that I noticed being here this morning in the preparation for this part of the service is that I think I'm going to end up, I not end up, but I am singing to the choir here. So this is going to be an easy audience. In November, the topic of the month was wonder and mystery. And now it's hope. I mean, how could we have anything? I wonder if there's a topic that you all could come up with that trees wouldn't fit. But certainly it does. The wonder and the mystery, and then also the hope, are certainly the no better way to talk about trees than into these contexts. We may not have actually been acutely aware of our 100-year-old trees back before Ike and what they did for us. Often, we're not aware even of, as someone said to me the other day, they said they were grateful for being able to stand up and walk in the kitchen and make a cup of coffee because they'd been ill. We don't really remember those things, but now we remember our trees. We took them for granted. And once they were gone, though, we developed this acute, true appreciation for the majesty and grandeur of those trees. And we see them now. We know it. From these funny little scrawny planted, newly planted trees like this one, or our sycamores that are so funny looking when we put them in the ground, but they sprout out like Jack and the Beanstalks, to our mighty survivor trees. They're all precious. There are some amazing and wonderful things that I've researched in looking at this. These old trees. There's a bristlecone pine in California that's 4,800 years old. One tree, 4,800 years old. And that's not the oldest tree on Earth. This older than the Egyptian pyramids. One tree. What they've seen, what they're going to see, we're just a little blip in that time if we can keep from destroying them. There's a Norway spruce, not on the same class of tree as this, a Norway spruce, almost 9,550 years old in Norway. It is one of the most visited things in Norway, needless to say. There's a weird little oak in, let me see where it was, Utah. No. I think it too, this too is in California. The Eurepa oak. 13,000 years old. Now, it was discovered in 2009. Of course, it had been living there all along. We just realized in 2009 what it was. And it is a mile and a half in width. It only grows 3 feet tall. So if you didn't, it's a clone. So if you didn't realize what you were dealing with, you would think you just had, this is a brush. Shrubby brush, let's get rid of it. And in reality, what it is a 13,000-year-old creature. So in Utah, the oldest is the pando tree, which is really, it doesn't look like a tree, it looks like hundreds of trees. But it is the oldest living organism. It has one single root system and everything else are just little sprouts coming off of it. 80,000 years old. Unfortunately, they're worried about it dying. It's getting smaller, the number of sprouts that are coming up that look like aspen trees. Are aspen trees of some sort, are decreasing in number. So they're worried about the climate change is going to do away with this 80,000-year-old tree. And the mystery and wonder of how big these things get. Redwoods are the tallest trees. Sequoias out on the coast, California coast and in other places are fatter than the redwoods, but the redwoods are the tallest. There's some other species that grow as tall giant also. There's a eucalyptus in Australia. The eucalyptus is the second tallest species, can be. And this centurion is 327 feet tall. It was damaged in last year's Australian fires. And I was trying to find out if it is still doing okay in this year's. It's in Tasmania. And so it's that section of the country. They're really very worried about it. They're worried about it from the damage from last year's fires. So this tree, we may not have it for very much longer because the fires are taking down a number of the big giant trees in Australia. In Oregon, a Donner fir is 327 feet tall. And the granddaddy of them all, Hyperpion, is a redwood out in California, 380 feet tall. You can't even see the top. More than 35-story building. So think about the Anaco building downtown here. This tree is taller than the Anaco building. So if you can imagine. And they form their own ecosystems up inside the trees. There's a wonderful book, if you get a chance to read it, called Wild Trees, about the people that have measured these trees and how they do it, the climate and so on and so forth. And in climbing these trees, they've found entire ecosystems up in the height of these trees. Creatures that live and die up there, other trees growing in the crooks and branches of the trees at the top, little plants, ferns, all kinds, a whole ecosystem living 300 feet above the earth and within the branches of these trees. So, brings to mind one of my favorite poems. Not my favorite, because I found the Mary Oliver poem, it's now my favorite, but one of my favorite poems of all times of trees. And it reminds us as we plant trees, to be careful where we plant them. This is by Jane Hirschfield. It is foolish to yet let a young redwood grow next to the house. Even in this one lifetime, you will have to choose that great calm being, this clutter of soup pots and books. Already the first branch tips brush at the window, softly, calmly, immensity taps at your life. So, however, we've all seen that other forces take effect. William Blake said, "The tree which moves some to tears of joy is in the eyes of others only a green thing that stands in the way. As a man is, so he sees." Or in the words of Ogden Nash, "I loved your first song. I think that I shall never see a billboard as lovely as a tree." Perhaps unless the tree billboards fall, I'll never see a tree at all. And what was interesting about finding this poem is when it was written. Take a guess. Think in your head. 1933. So, but new research is helping us all to understand the science behind the wonder and the mystery of trees. And I think with that information, we're going to be able to influence the people who only see these things as green things in the way. That's going to help us to appreciate our trees even more. They not only help us, but they also support each other. They can signal neighboring trees and actually support trees that are sick or injured. Now, how in the world do they do that? They just stand. We see these things stand there. They never move. They never do. Well, they blow in the wind, but they never move. They never do anything. So how in the world can they do that? Well, there's a couple of ways that they have. One is that they send out signals from there. They ooze out signals and chemicals from their leaves, just like they do the CO, the oxygen. They also, other chemicals come out as well. And they, so the atmosphere, and then they also have ground networks. So trees take in CO2 from the air through their leaves, and they use it with through photosynthesis and release oxygen and other chemicals into the atmosphere. For example, the Great Smoky Mountains, the mists are smoky because of the mist of the trees. And the coastal redwood forest, the coastal forests release water and chemicals into the air that then produces the rain inland over the mountains. We don't know a lot, we don't know everything about all the pheromones and chemicals that the trees release, but the ones that we do know about tell us a lot about why we missed our trees after Ike and why they fill us with wonder. They ooze off antibiotics, antifungals, anti-stress chemicals, chemicals that prevent cancer, chemicals that relieve asthma. They're all invisibly released. So without us even realizing and knowing the science behind this, we could be in our trees and feel better without even knowing why. All this stuff sort of sounds like voodoo, right? But, and is there really enough there to make a difference? Well, let's think about it. We know that if we sit in pollution, we're going to get sick. We can't see the pollution. We're not, it's all dose dependent. So why can't we sit in these beneficial atmospheric hormones and get well? So I think it's something to really, why not the opposite? So these trees not only use these atmospheric releases for beneficial uses, they also use them to signal other trees. They use it to create their own weather and to help critters that they interact with like us. In Africa, for example, the acacia trees will release a hormone into the atmosphere when the giraffes start to eat the leaves. So it warns the other trees around it to produce a chemical that makes those leaves taste bad. So when the giraffes go to munch on them, they'll leave them alone. Now, interestingly enough, in the interdependent ecology of all of this, the giraffes have learned that the acacias do this. And so if they start to eat a tree that is bitter tasting, they will go upwind from that to find the trees that weren't able to get it, the stuff that was put out. So so not only do they transmit through the airs and talk to each other about that, but also underground. And this is where a lot of the most recent research has been done and is very exciting. We know that the roots will come out and touch each other. And the roots go very far away from the tree. It's up to 2 and 3 times the distance of the crown. So if you look at the crown of a tree, then the roots go out that much further on the outside. And they will touch and intertwine with each other. In addition to this touching and intertwining of the roots themselves, there is a symbiotic relationship with a fungus, mycorrhizal fungal network, that lives in the ground and provides, if they map it, they've actually been able to map it by injecting chemicals into the trees, which go down, and then they can read those radioactive, I don't think it's radioactive, but anyway, where they isotopics, where they can actually map these. And then when they put it up, it looks like a grid, a network grid, just like our internets and everything else does, our brains, actually, like the networks in our brains. These fungus, of course, they like this because they get sugars from the trees, so they get their food. But they also help the trees go, so the signals go back and forth between the fungal network and the tree roots and the trees. So this tree, something's happening to this tree. It gets a bug on it, and it goes, uh-oh. So it sends a signal down. It goes over here and comes to this tree. This tree says, bug's coming. And it does the, puts out the chemicals and things that it needs to protect itself from the bugs that are coming. But the most amazing thing of all is that not only can they warn each other about stuff like this, but they actually have found out that they support each other. If this tree over here got sick from bugs, but these trees were able to not get sick, this tree will send nutrients over here to this tree in order to support it while it's recovering. So we have to think, we know that this is strongly happening in the forest. It's been well documented. My question has to be, is this what's happening with our urban trees? You know, we have solitary trees. They don't have the support network. Or we have parks with different species of trees. And are they communicating the same way? There's been some work that's shown that, yes, interspecies communicate the same way. But what are we doing to our mycorrhizal fungal networks in our lawns and in our parks? We need to be careful to make sure that we support if it's coming up naturally, that we don't damage if it's there. And if it's not, there are, I'm now seeing on the online, that you can buy mycorrhizal fungi to add to your soil in order to try to get this sort of network going. So it's important for us to understand this and try to get it going. This is, they're now, the foresters are now having great fun with this, and they're calling it the Wood Wide Web. So the biggest trees in the network, they've mapped these, and the biggest trees in the networks are called the mother trees. And the mother trees support and send out, they're the hub for all of the rest of the trees around. And when those trees die, it's important that they not be taken out of the forest, because they're finding that the information that those trees have learned over the years, centuries of being there, are stored and continue to be sent out in terms of what bugs are bad, what chemicals are bad, how to survive a drought, how to do these other kinds of things. So it's important that the dead trees are left there for that information. They're finding out that that information, it continues to be spread out through the Wood Wide Web to the rest of the forest. There's also new research coming out that they also communicate using electrical impulses. So it gets better and better. They're really slow. They're only a third of an inch per second, this traveling of the impulses. But that's the same as a jellyfish and an earthworm. Their electrical impulses travel at that same rate. So, could we begin to think of trees as sentient? Can you sit with them? Silently, listening? Can you hear them? Not the wind in the trees, but can you hear the trees? So, one of the things that we often also take for granted in our trees is their constancy. We take it for granted. And we cherish it. They're always there for us. We can't even see them grow, but there's also another new developments that are going on. There's a company, the High Scientific Instrument Company, is making a dendrometer, and they're putting it together, trying to put together an ecosystem network. The dendrometer is a machine, is a measuring thing that goes around the trunk of the tree, and it measures the changes in the size of that strap. And they are finding that tree trunks will get bigger and smaller as the day goes by. Almost as if the tree is breathing. It has a lot to do with the water transport up and down through the tree, and they've used a lot of this information to learn about how trees grow, how they use water, and so forth. This network, they're trying to gather the information with this to coordinate with weather information in order to try to come to a better understanding of how the meteorological data can help us help the trees survive, as the trees are helping us to survive in this changing world. So we know that they're extracting the carbon dioxide out of the tree, out of the earth. This is the most important thing. There's a NASA video that shows tree photosynthesis throughout the year. It's a little scary, but I highly recommend you to go look at it online, pull it up online, just NASA tree photosynthesis video. Trees cool our homes. They're natural air conditioners. They absorb rainwater to help with our flooding. They settle out and trap dust, pollen, and smoke from the air. The dust level if the wind's blowing this way, the dust level on this side of the tree is 75% less than on the windward side of the tree. They increase property values, they increase retail shopping, they reduce the maintenance costs on streets that are shaded by trees, they clean our water before it runs into the bays and bayous, prevent erosion, reduce crimes in neighborhood. Just looking at a tree through a window decreases the number of days that you're needed to stay in a hospital while you're healing. Japanese did a study on having people go into forested areas. They call it now forest bathing. And they found that it doesn't take long, a couple hours a day, and not very often, but it does. It increases the immune system, the T cells and the other cells and the white blood cells to increase the immune strength in the immune system, reduces stress, lowers your blood pressure, improves your mood, helps focus for both adults and children. What they find is that the eyes, when you've got so much to try to focus on, you can't do it. But when you're walking in a forest or in a trees, even in a park, your eyes begin to settle because the quiet and the symmetry of the forest give you settle, and so then it helps your brain to focus. And that is residual. It continues on even past your way being there. And the larger the tree, the more it provides these services exponentially. So a 6-inch tree, we measure them by the diameter of the trunk. A 6-inch tree will do blah, blah, blah. A 12-inch tree doesn't do twice as much. It does like 4 times as much. So we need to protect our survivor trees, protect our groves. If we had to pay for all the services these trees provided, we couldn't afford it. With the trees, within the trees is our hope. And I loved how you defined hope this month with Barack Obama's quotes about hope being a call to action. And not that it's just something amorphous out there that might happen, that we want to happen. It's a call to action, both for ourselves, our bodies, our souls, and our planet. Trees are our hope. So spend time with the trees. Read. Sit under them and walk under them. Sit under them and read. Absorb. Listen to the trees. Research. Let them heal you. Protect the trees, especially the big ones. If you can help other nations to protect large swaths of trees, that's what we need for the planet. And plant trees. They are our best hope. So, and I'd like to close with stay a while. If I can get through this. I inherited this love. My father used to say, my mother had us all out as Girl Scouts, and in learning all the names of all the trees and camping and doing the whole thing, and my father used to say that my mother would never be happy coming out unless she could come out, and until the day she came out of the house, and in order to get to the car, she had to hack her way through. So, Here we go. This is a poem by Mary Oliver. When I am among the trees, especially the willows and the honey locusts, equally the beech, the oaks and the pines, they give off such hints of gladness. I would almost say they save me and daily. I am so distant from the hope of myself in which I have goodness and discernment and never hurry through the world, but walk slowly and bow often. Around me, the trees stir in their leaves and call out, "Stay a while." The light flows from their branches, and they call again. It's simple, they say, and you too have come into the world to do this. To go easy, to be filled with light, and to shine. Thank you very much.